Here's a shocking fact about probiotics. According to Naveen Jain, billionaire and founder of Viome, the at-home test that measures gut bacteria count, almost no probiotics show up in people's gut analysis. That means 99% of probiotics out there don't colonize your gut as they claim. Still, research shows we need good bacteria to fight the bad ones. So what's the solution? Well, I want to tell you about a single-strain proteolytic probiotic called P3OM. I use it myself. P3OM uses a patented natural process to upgrade a well-researched probiotic strain. The result is a super strain that my friend Wade Lightheart calls, quote, the Navy SEAL of probiotics. It kicks the bad bacteria's butts. The P3OM patent proves the strain is proteolytic, meaning it digests protein. It's antiviral, antiretroviral, eliminates pathogens and waste, and it's maintainable in the human digestive system. Once in your body, the P3OM super strain doubles every 20 minutes and helps get rid of the bad bacteria before it is then safely eliminated. To see it in action, go to p3om.com/drew. Again, that is p3om.com/drew, and watch it dissolve a piece of raw steak. Try P3OM risk-free today. They have the best money-back guarantee in the industry. It's a 365-day full money-back guarantee. And if you don't find P3OM to be the most potent probiotic you've ever taken, their support team will give you all your money back, no questions asked. When you go to p3om.com/drew, just be sure to enter the coupon code DRDREW, D-R-D-R-E-W, to receive a 20% discount. As always, a big thank you for listening to our show. We'd like to ask a small favor, but it's important. Take only a few minutes if you're particularly one of the first people to do it. Podcast One will make it worth your while, literally. We're asking you to complete a short survey. The information you give us can help us make things better for the show and for you as a listener. Go to podcast1/survey and everything will be right there. That is podcast1/survey. The first 250 people who complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to Amazon.com. And two grand prize winners will be selected at random to get a $100 Amazon gift card. How about that? Free money? Win-win. Our shows are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will help us cater to the needs of you as a listener. Please go to podcast1.com/survey, answer some questions, and potentially make some money along the way. Thank you for being a dedicated listener. Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Be sure to support those that support us here. New thing I want you guys to do, if you don't mind, is check out drdrew.tv, sign up there, and you will get email blast when we go live on a live show where you can just call in and ask questions. That'll be on the weekends coming up. Keep an eye out for that, and don't forget After Dark and the family pods at drdrew.com. It's my privilege to welcome Stephen Moore. Stephen is the co-founder and CEO of Frax. It's a cryptocurrency company. His book is Trumponomics, Inside the American First Plan to Revive Our Economy, available on Amazon. You can follow him at Stephen Moore with a P-H, M-O-O-R-E. And he was a significant advisor to President Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and was nominated to the Federal Reserve Board in March of 2019, but pulled your name.
I did. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Pleasure
Thank you for
to
having
be
me.
Here. Yeah. To me, it seems like the world we live in is one of just total vitriol and attacks.
Were you not
familiar with it at the time?
I think you could say that when it came to what I was going through. I have to say I was really pretty shocked that people actually cared that much about a Federal Reserve Board. You know, I mean, the fact is I was very honored when the president asked me to do this. I honestly didn't think it would be get a lot of attention because the truth is, you know, when it comes to the Federal Reserve Board, there's one person who has all the power, and that's the chairman. And I wasn't nominated to be the chairman. But it was almost flattering that the left was that afraid of me to be on that august board. And now that it's over, I love the life I'm living, and it would have been quite restrictive. And, you know, sitting around with, 20 PhD economists is not exactly a barrel of monkeys.
Well, so. That's one thing I was going to say, which is that it's a far more thought of a think tank and academic sort of environment, isn't than many people, at least for the Board of Governors, not necessarily the meetings, but you're thinking about a lot of stuff and crunching a lot of numbers.
Well, I mean, look, you know, this is the most powerful nation in the world. Our currency is in a lot of ways the global currency. So, yeah, it's an extremely powerful board, but the chairman makes essentially all the decisions. And so I was going to use it as kind of a perch to speak out about the economy. It's no secret that the president president is not happy with the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that. Let's go right to it. What do you think about that?
Trump has been right. I mean, the Fed has been behind the curve. We have more of a threat of deflation than inflation. These are really interesting times, by the way, that we're living in, if you follow this stuff.
May you live in interesting times. Exactly. Curse.
I didn't think I'd ever see a time when you would have interest rates that were –
negative.
In some cases, negative.
Negative in Europe.
Not in the U.S., but in Europe.
That's
right?
Insane.
That's insane. I mean,
and we don't even know what
it is. Insane. I mean, you would have to be insane to buy a 30-year bond at a negative interest rate.
A 30-year bond, you
pay the government
to take your money. The bondholder to hold your money, which is insanity.
Yeah, it is. And so it's a sign of severe risk aversion. They're basically saying, by the way, think about this. You would be better off taking your money, putting it in a suitcase and burying it in your backyard.
Then you put it in gold, you might be a lot better.
We don't have negative interest rates in the U.S., but they're very, very low. And we have an inverted yield curve, which means the long-term rates in some cases are lower than the short-term rates.
And we don't know the potential black swan hidden in these reverse
rates. We don't, because
rates.
We've never really, at
it's
least
happened.
Modern times, lived through this.
Yeah.
But look, I'm an optimist on the U.S. economy. I think things are going very well, from employment and an interest rate and an inflation standpoint. So I'm not trying to say that this is the end of the world. It's just uncharted territory. Look, when I graduated from college, I don't know how old are you?
I'm 61.
Okay, you and I are about the same age.
Yeah.
I'm 59. You remember, there was a time in the late 70s when you had 20% mortgage interest rates.
I remember trying to buy a CD at 20%.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was working as at a bank, a community bank in about 79, 80, and that bank was offering people lifetime CDs at 11% interest rates. Needless to say, they went bankrupt, because what happened, a few years after that is, Reagan came in and interest rates came. Remember, they came down from, 15% down to about 4 or 5%.
Didn't he raise them at first and then drop
them?
The
Fed raised rates, which sweated inflation out of the system.
Yeah, yeah.
And, long-term interest rates are basically based on – and incidentally, there's an important economic lesson there. The reason people are buying – we said, why would you buy an interest rate – a bond at a negative interest rate, even 30-year? I mean, would you buy a 30-year government bond at a 2% interest rate?
No.
No.
You're
making a bet that over the next 30 years, inflation is going to be less than 2%.
Right.
I think that's a pretty bad bet.
I wouldn't hold it, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. So anyway, you've got a strange world, and Trump believes that the Fed has been too tight, and I happen to agree with him. I think the Fed made some catastrophically bad decisions at the end of 2018 when they raised rates twice, and it took the life out of the stock market.
But didn't the board – I kept all the way through Janet Yellen's tenure. Mm-hmm. I just kept hearing that they needed room to breathe.
Yeah.
If something happens, there's nothing we can do.
Well, see, I reject that argument. This was the argument that we have to raise the rates now so we can cut them later.
Right.
In other words, we have to cause a recession now so that we can combat the recession we caused by lowering rates later. I hear that argument all the time.
Yeah.
I just don't buy it. I mean, like, why if the economy's weak, why and by the way, what was going on in 2018, the economy was actually strong. We had no inflation, we had rising wages, we had, as you mentioned, I worked for Trump, we put this plan together. We're like, we've reached nirvana. We have high growth, rising wages, no inflation. And then the Fed starts raising rates and takes the wind out of the sails of the economy. So, look, I think the Fed has made a few mistakes. I think they're correcting them now. The Fed is actually injecting cash into the economy right now.
Last week.
With these repos. So that's a fancy term for saying in the overnight markets, it's pumping money into the banks because they're running out of cash. This is a sign that everybody wants to own dollars. We have the strongest economy in the world. Europe isn't growing. Japan isn't growing.
Also
Germany.
Also a sign that there's no inflation, because if you were doing that in an inflationary environment, there would be inflation.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You get an A in economics. You're exactly right about that. So, that's the point of why the Fed should be, in addition to doing this, lowering rates, not raising them.
Well, if anything, it gives them some confidence to do so.
By the way, I have to say this, I've always said that the bane of my existence is I travel all the time. The bane of my existence is get stuck in the middle seat of an airplane. And so I've got a little trick. If you ever if you ever have that happen to you, what you do is you turn to your seatmates and start talking about monetary policy and just clears up the whole row. It works every time.
That's hysterical.
So I hope we haven't lost our listeners.
Well, I know.
Monetary policy. But it's important. I mean, it really is important about the direction of the economy and jobs and inflation and your interest rate you have on your mortgage and all these things are really, you know, influenced by – you know, one of the problems I have with the Federal Reserve is why do we put so much power into a few people who are not elected? One of the things I wanted to do if I got in the Fed – over the Fed and was to raise the veil of secrecy. Well, open it up. Let's see why they're making the decisions they do. There was an attitude among a lot of people that these are somehow like oracles or something like that can see the future. And they're not. Yeah. They make mistakes all the time just like you and I make mistakes.
Or that it would somehow bias markets or freak markets out, one or the other.
Yeah. And look, I think – the idea – I'm a big believer in sunshine. Let the sunshine in. Let people figure out how they're making the decisions, why they're making the decisions. All this stuff gets leaked anyway. So then it just becomes the insiders get the information and that hurts the little guy.
So I'm a complete dilettante in your field, but I try to learn material in areas where I've had limited training. And so I listen to a podcast from the Hoover Institute. I think it's Econ Talk.
I love those guys.
Yeah. And I recently listened to a Susan Houseman talking about manufacturing. And she had a couple of points that I thought were sort of interesting. Her data, again, I can't recount the specific analysis, but her data essentially showed that technology and automation was not the major problem in terms of reducing jobs in the manufacturing sector. It was offshore. It was essentially the trade problem.
I don't agree with that. I think that I remember when I was a kid. I grew up in Chicago, and I remember one time when I was about 12 years old. So this would have been early 70s. My parents took me to Detroit. You know, so we went to the steel factories, we went to the auto factories, and I'll never forget. You know. Touring those things. I mean, my God, I mean, those were sweat, you know, what do they call them? The sweatshop jobs. I mean, those were people, you know, carrying every equipment and, you know, with hard hats on. And it was brutal. I was like, I don't want to do this when I grow up. But, you know, if you go into a modern steel factory or an auto factory today, it's nothing like it was 35 years. I mean, there's people in white coats, you know, technicians.
Right.
So I think a lot
there
of it
are
really,
less of them on the line, right?
Yeah, pardon?
There are less of those people on the line.
Them.
But behind them is a whole sector that's contributing, correct me if I'm wrong, to the operation of these manufacturing technologically advanced units that go down as the service sector and not the manufacturing sector.
That's a great point. You're very, very well put. You know, that it used to be GM. You know, had all of everything. GM was a multifaceted company with massive accounting and, you know, advertising, da, da, da. They've shipped that out. Look, we're not the bottom line is this. We are not losing in the last couple of months, we've lost manufacturing jobs. But the truth is, you know, look, I'm biased. I work for Trump. I helped put the economic plan together. So I like to cite some of these statistics. We've gained about 1.4 million blue-collar jobs in the last 3 years. We've gained mining jobs, manufacturing jobs, construction jobs. My goodness. I mean, as I said, I travel all over the country. I go over from Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine. Every city you go to, with very few exceptions, whether it's Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Denver, Colorado, Nashville, Tennessee, Los Angeles, California, all you see is cranes building everywhere. I mean we're building
kind of
things
crazy,
again.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you see it here, you see it everywhere. I mean, even if you go to Cleveland and Detroit, you see it.
Oh, yeah.
So America's, you know, building things again. And this idea that we're, you know, losing all the blue collar jobs, I think that's they're back, you know, and we're kind of proud of that. And partly because we cut our, you mentioned factories leaving the United States. And, and of course there was some of that, no question. They were going to China, they were going to Mexico, they were going to India. One of the reasons we cut the business tax rate was to try to make America more, you know, attractive place to invest in. And we think that that's helped save a lot of these jobs.
Well, I want to get into the China problem in a second, but before I'll let you talk about fracs so I don't lose that in the weeds. Tell me about
fracs. That's the reason I'm here because
that's why you're here. Tell me about
fracs. That's what brought me to LA and, you know, I became enamored with this new technology. This is the way I put it is that these cryptocurrencies are the next big thing. And, you know, it's maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much one to say this is like the internet in terms of how mm-hmm. it's going to change the way we transact in terms of transactions that happen. I buy something from you, you buy something from me. More and more, it's going to be digital currency that's going to make those transactions. So it's not going to be paper dollar bills. And what's cool about this is, it appeals to me because I'm kind of a libertarian. I don't like I want government as much out of my life as possible. So this is a
pro-Fed libertarian.
Yeah, I am. You know, and so I like the idea of getting rid of the government monopoly over currencies. Mm-hmm. And right now, you know, you've got central bankers. We started this conversation about talking central banks that are making all the decisions about what should an interest rate be and what's this and that. And now that you've got these private currencies that do an end run around government and
the
cryptocurrency, they are electronic currencies. Frax is the one that I've signed up with because I think they've got a great technology. But the cool thing about this is now you can make transactions. And guess what? It's no longer the government's business. They can't track these things. You know, I'm a privacy guy too. I don't want the government knowing what I bought it, you know, how much I paid for my house or what I bought for this or that. So it's also one of the practical reasons this is going to take off is as more and more transactions happen digitally, you want to buy something on Amazon, you just use a Frax currency. You can buy the stuff and there's no transaction costs. You know, if you use a credit card or use, you know, PayPal or these other kinds of, payment systems, you pay sometimes a 3 or 4%. You know, charge for that.
Somebody does anyway.
Yeah. So this, yeah, well, ultimately the consumer pays it, right? Yeah. And so this is a really a neat new frontier for the digital age. And there's no question that we're going to see cryptocurrencies. It's a question of which ones are going to win out. Now, you may have heard of
Facebook.
Libra in Facebook.
No,
they're the big 800-pound gorilla, or at least they were, although the last month or two has not gone well for them. A lot of companies are dropping out of Libra for one reason or another.
But I thought it was concern about the developing countries were going to be – their currencies were going to be
undermined by this. Biggest problem I think that Libra has faced in Facebook is the government regulators are saying, you know, they might regulate them out of existence. This – look, when you have a new movement like this that is, you know, subverting – the impact of the Federal Reserve Board, the SEC, the Commodities Futures Trading Corporation, you know, they don't like that
international
too much.
Monetary policy.
Yeah, exactly.
The World Bank,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Do you think those people want this? No.
Well, they're worried about
it. This takes away their power.
Well, of course. I'm sure that, but I mean, if it really would help humanity, I'm sure they would want to help bring it in, but they want to bring it on their terms.
I think you have more trust. I do think that, you know, the nature of government bureaucratic institutions is to preserve their
protect themselves. Yeah.
And so I do think that they, now look, I mean, I'm not saying they're all bad people. Mm. I'm just saying that they do view this as a threat to their fiefdoms. I mean, you know, the Federal Reserve, they want to run the monetary policy in the world. They don't want other currencies that are outside of their control.
So explain to people how cryptocurrencies work and what's up with yours.
So ours is basically based on the dollar. So it's what's unique about the Frax technology is that it's a dollar for a dollar. So you get $1 for – you know, in other words, you give me a dollar, you get a dollar of Frax. It's pegged to the dollar. So if the dollar goes up or down, it moves with that. Whereas the Libra, for example, was based on a basket of currencies, and we think that the dollar is more stable in value. It goes back to the question of why do you have a currency? Why do you have dollar bills in your pocket or in your bank account? Because if you didn't believe that the money was going to retain its value, you wouldn't do that, right? You'd hold gold or something else. And so we believe the Frax will be a very stable currency. In fact, we call Frax the stable currency because, you know, it'll always be pegged to the dollar. The dollar has been pretty stable over the last 30 years in value. It's not perfect, but it's certainly been a pretty stable currency. That's how it became the global currency. And so you now will trade in your dollars for Frax. You can make all sorts of digital purchases with your Frax currencies. You don't pay any transaction fees. The government can't keep track of what you're buying and how much you're paying for things. And so there's a practical reason why people would want to do this. And by the way, I was talking to Sam Kazmian, who's the CEO of the company today, and he was saying, you know, he thinks the big – for international transactions, if you buy something in Germany or you buy – you know, you're talking about big companies that are buying things overseas all the time, this is a very practical way of buying these products.
And you might save significant amounts if it's 2% of a major transaction.
Yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah. But I thought part of cryptocurrency was letting it float. I thought that was part of the whole –
that's just the interesting thing. I mean, it's a good question. So whatever – most people are familiar with is something called Bitcoin.
Yes.
I'm sure you know Bitcoin.
Yes.
Well, this is the problem with Bitcoin is Bitcoin you remember, it goes back to what I just said. You have a currency. The purpose of a currency, you can look up Webster's Dictionary, is to hold value over time. So it's a good means of exchange. If you've got a currency that's going up and down and up and down and up and down, and it loses its practical function. And so this is a problem. I would argue right now Bitcoin is not really a currency. What it is a speculative. People are just buying it to speculate that it will go up in value or down. You know, they're either shorting it because they think it's going to go down. But it's not really being used as a – people don't use Bitcoins in transactions the way Frax would be because it's too volatile in price.
Was the assumption that it would stabilize eventually?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I think that there was a huge rush at the beginning because people thought it was cool as you had this new currency. But it wasn't pegged to anything. And so it became, you know, you'd have a rush of people buying it and its price would go up. And then people go, oh, no, you know, just – and then it would fall in price. And, you know, it was like a stock, you know, that was going up and down. And that's not what you want in a currency.
Like a commodity really is where it was going.
But look, for, you know, Bitcoin, people who invested at the very beginning with Bitcoin made a lot of money. If you bought it 2 years ago, you didn't make a lot of money. It's actually fallen.
Yeah. So – does it work the same way by the computer to computer?
It's all digitalized. You know, by the way, I am not the – you're going to have to get the computer guys who have done, you know, literally thousands of hours of coding to make this thing work, to make sure that – for example, one issue is how do you make sure that you don't inflate the currency? That's a, somebody shows up, hey, I've got 100,000 fracs. You know, I just found them. No, you have to – it's very technical stuff. You have to mine these. You know, in other words, you have to find them on the internet and you have to pay, you know, an amount of money, you know, for them. And so they are technologically stable in price.
And you're the CEO. Is it
– I'm not the CEO. Oh, I'm a co-founder.
Okay.
CEO is Sam Kasman. He started. Yeah. So I'm one of the co-founders. I loved it because I love these guys. They, you know, the guys who are running the company, they're young. You know, this is a new age. They're young guys. They've been very successful in other endeavors. They understand, you know, all this blockchain stuff and all of this stuff with the digitalized – everything being digital. It's the new age, and I believe – 5 years from now, if you have me back, you know, it'll be a very common thing that people use. You know, you'll use dollar bills if you go to the 7-Eleven and, you know, buy a soda. But for your internet purchases, we're going to be more and more common. You'll just use one of these cryptocurrencies, and we hope the one you use is Frax.
If it stays stable and secure, I can't imagine why you wouldn't. You save money every time
exactly.
you use it.
Yeah.
So what do you want people to do? Do you want people to sign
well,
up
we
for
want
Frax,
people. Or? Well, it'll be sometime in the next few months. It'll be operational. People should check it out.
Where do you go?
It's frax.finance. And, you know, it's a great way to just, you know, shelter your money from the government to have a way of making your transactions on the internet. And we think it could be, you know, tens and tens of billions of dollars of Frax being traded every day.
How do you buy it?
Well, that's a good question.
You can't have to feed dollar bills into your computer.
No, you'll have to. That's a complicated process. You have to buy another cryptocurrency and you trade that in for Frax, and you know, it's a complicated process. But there's a real network effect. In other words, it's going to be tough going at first, but once it gets bigger and bigger, what we want is one thing we would want, for example, is what do people buy on the internet? Amazon, right? Yeah. That's by far the biggest. So we want Amazon to say, we take Frax. You can buy, you know, your books and your produce and all these things with Frax. That would be gigantic for us.
Are you guys talking to them?
We're talking with all the major retailers and so on, and they're interested. I mean, they're interested.
They see it coming.
I do. I think – but look, at some point as this catches on, they're going to have to take Frax, right? Because people are going to have it. Yeah. They're not going to buy it if they can't pay with Frax.
If you can make it easier somehow to buy Frax, the Frax dollars, I think it'll be called Frax dollars.
I didn't do a very good – you're going to have to get Sam Kasman in here to explain how the whole thing gets launched because it is.
Whenever I've tried to buy cryptocurrency, it's always like, forget it. I just ran out of steam. So any ease, you know, streamlining that, making it easier, I don't know what – again,
it makes every transaction you make instantaneous,
but you want to take the credit cards out of it, right?
Yeah. The credit card companies aren't going to like this at all.
Right. So how do you get the money into the Frax?
You have to buy them. And there's a process by which you do that. And please don't explain
that's the part I want to be streamlined.
Yeah. But, you know, eventually you have a – essentially like a bank account that has a certain amount of Frax currencies that you bought, and then you use that for – and when you run out of them, you have to go and buy more of them.
You send a check to somebody? It'll be a thing. All right.
That's chapter two. Okay?
All right. Fair enough. So let's get back to the general economic frontier right now. And when you think about the potential risk, are there black swans out there that you worry about? Is there anything that you sort of – when you try – I always try to think.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
Landmines me? What do you think about
it? Well, I'm a natural optimist, so I don't think
me too. Me too. But I got to say the negative interest rate in Europe, I keep thinking we don't even know what the potential black swan is there.
Okay, so there's two or three black clouds.
Yeah.
Let's start with the big one, which you – said you wanted to talk about, China. So China is a bad actor. I'm a free trade guy. Yeah. I happen to agree with Trump, though, on China. I think China is a menace on the world stage. I'm worried about them. I think I'm worried about them militarily. I'm worried about them in terms of their cheating and stealing and being predatory trade practices, which are hurting the United States and other countries that they – and ultimately it's hurting them as well. I'm not bullish on China. I think China has moved in the wrong direction in so many areas. They've moved away from the free market and more towards a kind of totalitarian central planning model, which in the end isn't – I think it's going to crash and burn eventually. And so – but look, there were the two largest economies in the world, U.S. and China, and we're in a trade war. And if you had Donald Trump here and you asked, did we start this trade war? He said, no, they started this 10 years ago. We're just figuring out that we're in a war, and I happen to agree with them on that. I don't like tariffs, but I think that they're an appropriate tool to try to change China's behavior. So we have this tentative deal right now that I told Trump, I met with them about a week ago in the Oval Office. I advised him. I said, Mr. President, get the best deal you can from China. This isn't going to end. This is going to be like the old Cold War. This is going to go on for a while until we figure out which of these two titanic, economies, takes the lead. And by the way, I'll bet on the United States, not China. But it's going to take a while. But if we can get this trade deal signed, sealed, and delivered, I think it'll be a very positive thing for the economy and the stock market. And I think it'll help Trump a lot in 2020. He needs a strong economy in 2020 to get elected. So that's number one. You got to get the trade thing resolved. Number two, I am worried about the rest of the world. They're not growing. As I mentioned earlier, there's no growth in Europe right now. Germany's in recession. Japan's flatlined. China's economy is really tanked.
But 6% growth is
tanked? Well, I hope you're saying that with a smirk because they lie about their statistics.
Okay.
We don't really know what their growth is.
I spoke to a guy that's he sort of studies revolutions all over the world. He's in Hong Kong right now.
Right.
And he goes, you don't realize how bad this economy thing is. He says Trump has taken a chainsaw to the Chinese economy and we don't see it.
And also the press isn't reporting that.
Yeah.
They keep saying how much the tariffs are hurting us, which they are. I mean, I'm not denying that. But they're hurting China. Trump used to say, if we can't trade with China, we sneeze. If they can't trade with us, they catch pneumonia. China needs access to the American market, period. Hard stop. And so they are being hurt by this. And that's why, as I said earlier, an agreement, a truce would be good for the U.S. and China. Mm. So hopefully they'll do what's in their own self-interest.
Well, so the big problem they have, it seems to me, is that these manufacturers are leaving rapidly.
Yes, they're going to Vietnam.
Southeast Asia and South America.
That's right.
And they're not coming back.
Exactly.
I don't care how good the deal gets
that's
in China. They're going to stay right where they are.
So they're taking a big risk because a lot of people say, well, they'll just wait out Trump and hope that he loses in 2000.
The businesses
the problem
are too
is
fast
they might not be able to wait a year for that to happen. That's a great point.
Businesses are nimble. The U.S. businesses particularly.
And so is capital. Capital can flee. Here's another problem they have. I mean, everybody's following what's happening in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is the jewel of China, right? I mean, it's the place that's grown like crazy. And I think there's a decent chance you're going to see, unfortunately, the People's Liberation Army moving into Hong Kong. If that happens, you're going to see capital leave Hong Kong en masse and – where is it going to go? The country I'm really high on, by the way, here's my investment advice.
Wait, hold on. It's
a country in Asia.
Singapore?
Singapore, yeah. Singapore is going to be the new Hong Kong. I mean, because all
it already
that capital,
is, isn't it?
I know it is, but I mean, it's in fact, it's probably richer. But I mean,
I think Vietnam and Cambodia might get
well.
A
those
lot of this too.
I mean, they're all going to benefit from the fact that China,
Indonesia too, has got a lot of room.
You've got
to
it.
Go,
There's a lot of populous countries around there that can flee.
Indonesia is the fifth largest population.
I know, isn't that amazing?
World?
What do they have?
It.
Like 150 million people or something like that.
So there's lots of interesting things that could happen on the positive front. But I keep trying to figure out where the black swans could be,
so
where the hidden problems
are. It's the breakdown in potentially international trade. It's the the problem that the rest of the world isn't growing. And then, look, I'll say something that some of your listeners will agree with and some don't. I'm worried about what's happened with the Democratic Party. I mean, I listen – and I'm not an especially partisan person. I mean, I'm here happy to rag on the Republicans if you want me to. But – I'm not hearing any good ideas out of Democrats. I mean, it's all income redistribution, soak the rich, sack it to the rich. We're going to punish people who are successful. There's no growth theme. I mean, I always say that if John F. Kennedy were alive today, he'd be laughed off the stage in the Democratic Party today. He believed in free trade. He believed in – he cut taxes. He believed in a strong economy. He used to say a rising tide lifts all boats. Now what I'm hearing is just take it from the rich. Steal – it's like plundering people.
Well,
it's not an economic growth message. And I think that – look, if people actually thought that Elizabeth Warren was going to be the next president – I don't know anything about your politics, but do you think people want to invest in that kind of situation? We're going to sack it to the big companies that are too sick. We're going to break up big companies. I mean, 156 million Americans have money in the stock market, either individually owning it or through retirement plans or 401k plans. I mean, this is an agenda that I find very troubling, and I think it could cause a lot of damage if that were to come to pass.
Well, I want to tell you again about our friends at CBDMD. They want to be your one-stop holiday shop. It's Halloween after all, for everything from recipes to gift guides to helpful hints to make the holidays better. Again, everyone's heard all the anecdotes about CBD in terms of pain. I just had a woman just recently struggling with ankle pain for years who had an excellent result with CBD. Sleep, anxiety, the anecdotes are there. The clinical science has not yet quite caught up with it. There are CBD products for your pets even to help them calm with all the chaos around Halloween, say, and around the dinners and Thanksgiving and of course, Christmas. So whether you're cooking, cleaning, shopping, or even just procrastinating, just turn to CBDMD. And to make prepping for the holidays even easier, CBDMD is offering all of our listeners 20% off your next order when you use the code DRDREW at checkout. Once again, CBDMD.com, promo code Dr. Drew, one word, for 20% off your purchase of premium CBD oil products from CBDMD. Again, CBDMD, just what the doctor ordered. Well, we're going to touch on a subject you heard me talk about before, and people are uncomfortable with it, but it's a medical issue, erectile dysfunction, and just the way people talk about it is uncomfortable. Truth is that as many as 30 million men are affected. Yeah, 60% at 60, 50% at 50, 40% at 40, we say, have this condition, and it's biological. It's just how it works. And it affects two people, the man and the partner, and really affect relationships. Now, we all know about the pharmaceutical options that have been helping for 20 years plus now, but for some, people don't want to take the medication, the solution isn't fully adequate or ineffective, or they just want to get off the meds, that's where Gainswave is a great option. Gainswave is a breakthrough shockwave-based treatment that addresses what is the root cause of ED, a buildup of arterial microplaque in the penis. Buildup can severely impede the blood flow necessary for an erection. The Gainswave treatment uses sound waves to break up the microplaque and improve blood flow. It's a non-invasive, drug-free, easy-to-tolerate option, very promising. It takes about 20 minutes. Most men enjoy the benefits same day. Best part is Gainswave reports a 75% success rate. Really, truly impressive. If you think you or your partner could benefit, I urge you to look into it. There are over 400 Gainswave providers in North America. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/wave, W-A-V-E. Again, that is D-R-D-R-E-W, drdrew.com/W-A-V-E. Check it out today. As a physician, I found there is one issue that, well, we all suffer from, and it is incurable. No one gets out alive. Of course, I'm talking about aging. And a lot of people are trying to push back Father Time with Botox, fillers, surgeries. And they're helpful, but one of the biggest concerns people have is coming out botched. If you're looking for a safe and natural way to maybe push back aging, consider Plexiderm Rapid Reduction Serum. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly reduces wrinkles under the eyes and even crow's feet. It works in minutes and can be used right from home. Not only is it fast, Plexiderm is a natural product derived right from shale rock, making it safe and easy to use. Everyday folks across the country have sworn by Plexiderm. It's a game changer in the beauty industry. The buzz of Plexiderm has become nationwide, and even some makeup artists and celebrities are talking about it. In fact, you have nothing to lose with Plexiderm. Affordable, safe, easy to use, comes in a 30-day money-back guarantee. And maybe you don't want surgeries. Save time, save money. Give Plexaderm a shot. You will not be disappointed. Again, money-back guarantee. And a great benefit is no one knows you're using it. Your age is safely addressed with Plexaderm. Go to TryPlexaderm.com. Use my code Drew for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10. The offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292. Again, that number, 800-685-1292. Of course, mention the code Drew, and you get that 50% reduction and $10 off. Visit Plexaderm.com today. Use code Drew at checkout. Again, that is TryPlexaderm, P-L-E-X-A-D-E-R-M, TryPlexaderm.com/Drew. Have you spent much time in this state? California? I mean, it's a total.
I have. I've written a number of books about states.
State is a mess. It is. Civilization is unraveling.
It is. I know
this. The basic functions of government are being ignored.
I completely agree with you. And it's, by the way, it's, you know, I always say, you know, the four biggest states in the country are, of course,
New York, Texas, Florida, California.
Yeah, there you go. And two of those are, you know, two of those states, Texas and Florida. You know what the income tax in Texas and Florida is, my
Zero.
Friend? Zero. Yeah. You know what it is? You know what it is here in California. It's 13.5%.
Yeah. And the gas tax and the property
of course.
Tax. And it's just all
so this state is being – and so here's the most amazing thing. And by the way, New York also has –
$5 to $6 a gallon for gas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so in the last decade, Florida and Texas have each gained roughly 1 million people from other states. You know, people voting with their feet. That is, to be very clear on this, 1 million more Americans moved to Texas than moved out of Texas. And I'm not talking about immigration. I'm talking about people moving from one state to another. A million people moved more people moved into Florida than moved out of Florida. And then New York, 1.5 million people over the last decade have moved out of New York. And California, which is – here we are in the most glorious place in the world. No. I mean, I love L.A. I love San Francisco. I love San Diego. It's really, this is the most beautiful place on the planet. Mm-hmm. And over the last decade, you know how many people have moved out of California on that? 1 million.
Yeah. And well, here's the problem is – They have people with businesses and the techs are entangled. We can't get out. We would happily
go. Well, you'd be surprised. I mean,
it's most of the middle class. They're just going.
You're being hollowed out.
Yeah,
that's very
going.
True. So the way I look at it is really, really rich people, they can afford to pay the toll of living here. You know, if you're worth $50 million, you can pay to live in New York. If you live in – but if you're really poor, you've got really nice welfare benefits in here, so this is a great place to be. The middle class is leaving, and that's a problem for a society. You know, I mean, I go to San Francisco. I'm going to San Francisco on Friday. My goodness, you can't walk down the streets of San Francisco today.
Right.
It's disgusting.
Right.
I mean, it's just
dangerous.
Like you put it very well. Civilization is breaking down in California, and it's a crisis, in my opinion, of leadership.
Oh my God, yes. It's just unbelievable. And they have a theological veil where they seem unable to perceive what's happening. Three people are dying on our streets in LA County every day. My question to the LA leadership is, what's the body count need to be before you try something different?
Yeah.
What's the body count? Is it be 100 a day, 1,000 a day before you stop this crap?
And the problem is you're enablers too. You know, the homeless we all feel for people who don't have a home. I mean, we want a roof over people's
heads. This is a mental health crisis.
It's a drug and a mental health problem. But you enable it though by, you know, why there's no reason you can't. We absolutely should have mental hospitals and we should have shelters for people who are homeless. But to have them pissing and pooping on street corners and, you know, disrupting commerce. Yeah. I mean, there used to be vagrancy laws against this. And I talk to people, so we just don't know what to do about
it. It's so easy.
Exactly.
It's so easy. I know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
But we need more psychiatric beds. We need more psychiatrists in order to pull it off. We change Lantern but Petras, which is we change the gravely disabled definition. We expand conservatorships and we enforce vagrancy laws. And it ends immediately. Immediately.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the end of it.
If you, I mean, they did this in New York. I mean, I hate to bring up Rudy Giuliani because he's been, he's pretty controversial.
But it wasn't just Giuliani. De Blasio has a new thing. It's kind of cool where he picks him up every night, takes him to Randall's Isle.
Yeah.
They have people, motivational enhancement experts, people giving them care there. They're given vouchers to go back to the city during the day if they want, which some of them do. Yeah. And at nighttime, they take them back. And that's fine. It works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then you're sanctuary cities and San Francisco and so on. So you become a magnet for illegal immigration. Look, I'm very pro-immigration. Well, I think immigrants are great for our country,
well,
but they got to come in legally and to have, you know, people
voting
in their legal.
You're racist. I know what you're trying to say. But Prop 47 made drug use legal and drug trafficking legal. Prop 57 made all crimes non-crimes, and AB 109 added.
So the question I have for you, I know you're the one, but, you know, so I watch you from 2,000 miles away on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And the question we're all asking you in California, is California savable?
It's not clear. Yeah. I mean, it'd be easy to do.
Yeah. Where's the leadership? I mean, Gavin Newsom, you know, I just don't see him taking the tough steps to deal with
it. It's not tough. I've been talking to the Domestic Policy Committee at the White House,
right,
and they're listening, and they get what's going on, and they're eventually, if nothing happens, they're going to have to do something. This is a medical and mental health crisis. This is a catastrophe.
And it's a drug issue as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And finally, the LA Times reported that 85% of people on the streets have drug or a mental health problem. Oh, no kidding.
Right.
And it's probably more like 95%. And so the public is starting to wake up to many things, that their life as they knew it is completely unlivable, that we have people dying on our streets, that we're giving free health care to people.
Well, it's becoming a public health problem too.
There's going to be – we have a typhus outbreak.
Yes.
And what follows typhus is Yersinia, which is called plague. That's what – in this environment, the last plague outbreak in the world was in Los Angeles in the 1920s. And we have
– aren't people awake to this? I mean, ladies and gentlemen, are you listening? This is a big problem.
I'm screaming it from every
rooftop. I know you do.
And it's beyond. But there's movement. There's movement.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging.
I recommend strongly a book named American Psychosis, it's called, that really chronicles how we got here. And it's mismanagement by my profession. And it sent the state medical system on the course of destruction. And then we put in place a community mental health center system that was a catastrophe. And Reagan finally closed that. And then we've done nothing to deal with the people that need the custodial care. They ended up in the prison, the nursing homes, and the streets. And that's it.
Well, you know, and then they say we need more affordable housing in California.
Nothing to do with housing. They won't go in the house.
Well, but that's another problem for people who, you know, like my son lives in San Francisco. He pays $2,200 a month in San Francisco for a jail cell practically.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and then, you know, why aren't they building, you know, I saw in California they were talking about bringing back rent control. I mean, there's one thing that almost all economists agree on.
Yeah.
We don't agree on a lot, but that rent control is a really bad idea because it actually reduces the supply of affordable housing.
Correct.
And yet, you know, all these bad ideas keep coming back in places like California.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like full of bad ideas. And it's you know, we're going to get rid of jails. We're going to, you know, leave people to languish and die on the streets. I mean, we went through this before in the 60s, didn't we?
The other thing we're reading about on the East Coast is your rolling blackouts. I mean, nobody has rolling blackouts anymore. It's because you don't have, enough stable energy sources.
Basic failure of government.
Yes.
The basic
absolutely function
of government and civil –
But nobody – to see you, I don't mean you personally, but you all who live here, you're responsible because you have to hold these politicians' feet to the fire, and nobody does.
It's almost like you can't because they're all together. They like completely hold the power in a way that no one –
Every once in a while – I mean I have to – it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. How long ago is it that when Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected? That was about 15, 20
years
ago.
Seems like it's 100 years
ago. Yeah. Well, I mean at least people at that time – and I view Arnold's governorship as a failed experiment.
Yep.
But at least people said, you know, it ain't working. We got to try something new. Now, Arnold tried to do some interesting things at the beginning. You know, he wasn't able to pull it off. And then it was just right back to where they were before. So I still think at some point you could get a leader to come in. And I don't think it's Gavin Newsom who can start to wreck this state in the right place because this is an awesome place. By the way, Silicon Valley is not irreplaceable. I mean, my God, I go to Austin, Texas. You go to Boston.
Yeah,
you go to all these places that are now becoming technology centers. I have a friend who had one of the 50 greatest homes in America. I'm saying this as a warning to Californians. Laguna Beach, the most beautiful, you know, view of the ocean. He built his business in California. His family's in business in California. He grew up in California. Da da da. He called me last year. Said, "I'm finally moving to Miami. I'm selling my house." Why aren't the alarm bells going off in this state?
New York has very similar stories.
Of course. I mean, can you go to Florida? Oh, my God. Florida is just New York South now. And people, what they do is they live there 183 days. They don't pay any income tax in New York. You know, they'll go back in the summer months and so on. But it's a, you know, the blue states are losing, and they're, and until they reform their ways, I think they're going to continue to lose people.
It really, it's just so scary to me. I mean, I don't know what to think about all this. It makes me, I have zero interest in politics, but it makes me feel like I have to get involved to save lives.
Well, the other thing that's happening, I think you see this in California, see a lot, is you get gated communities. So wealthy people are going to gate themselves off from the disaster that's happening. It's almost like, you know, out of one of these dystopian novels, yeah, right?
They have their own security forces and things.
Yeah.
Oof. All right, we've gone.
But
down
I'm an optimist. I think the economy is doing well. I think America is doing well. I think people are proud of the direction we're going in. I mean, people may not like Trump, and a lot of people don't like Trump. But you know, when you have the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the lowest Black unemployment rate, the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate, the lowest, you know, Asian unemployment rate, you've got low interest rates, you got a low inflation. I mean, this is a pretty good time. You know, 7.1 million jobs. That's how many surplus jobs there are in the United States today. That's never happened before. So all this talk about recession and the economy's coming to an end, I mean, come on. This is a really good – if you're a worker, this is the best economy and time to be looking for a job in 50 years.
One thing about New York, I've always said that, you know, the tax structure is very similar there to here, particularly if you're in New York City. But you get so – they give you something for your taxes. Yeah. There's culture and community spaces and public transportation. I mean, I don't mind paying taxes. It's when it – goes into
say about California is California is half a libertarian dreamland. It has no public services, but you do have high taxes.
Oh, God. Is that the fast train for $90 billion, of which none of it got spent properly? There's no train. It's just right. It's unreal. But back to the unemployment. So folks that are skeptical about Trump's unemployment yes. rate will often tell me, they'll go, well – we all heard about the people who dropped out of the unemployment yeah. lines during the Obama mm-hmm. administration. They're still on the sidelines.
So that's actually not – so there's something called the – I don't want to get too technical. There's something called the U6 unemployment rate. And I always – in the Obama years, I always called that the real unemployment rate because the headline unemployment rate was going down, but – precisely because a lot of people were dropping out of the workforce of working age. And so it was kind of an artificial metric that said things are getting better for workers when actually they weren't getting much better. The U6 unemployment rate has fallen from like 11% to about 6% in the last few years. So we have one of the lowest – by the U6 means that counts the people who, you know, have dropped out of the workforce.
How do they count them? How do they find them?
They know people – you know, this is all done by a survey and they know how many people – were you working and did you drop – they asked, did you drop out of the workforce? And so they know that. And then they also know – the other thing is, you know, if – let's say you're in a tough economic situation and you can't find a full-time job, so you have to take a part-time job. Well, that's – you're considered employed under the – but, you know, it's hard to – feed your family on a part-time job. So those people in the U6 are not counted as fully employed. Anyway, that number is much better. The income numbers are really good too. I mean, the average middle-class family now has $5,000 more income than they did in 2000 when Obama left office. That's a really big increase in middle-class income. So when Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren say, oh, only the rich have benefited from this economy, it's just that's plainly not true. You can see this, by the way, in the way people are spending money now. The one thing that's really held up the economy, because you're right, manufacturing has fallen off a little bit, has been consumers. We're shopping like crazy because we have more money in our paychecks.
We've always relied on that. have you seen the other thing we've done here in California, this AB5, where we've eliminated independent contractors? Everyone has to be a full-time employee now. Everybody.
This is a really bad idea because it means –
oh, no kidding. It's over. It's a sign of the law.
Yeah. It's a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah. Newsom signed it last week. So it was an attempt to get Uber to hire their drivers as employees, and they're forcing
that will destroy the company. When I came over here, an Uber driver drove me over, and he was telling me he's got three kids, he's got a wife who has cancer, and he's driving 50, 60 hours a week. I admire the guy. He's working his butt off, his tail off, to be able to support his family. He's an Uber driver. You want to put those people out of business?
Well, he wants to make them full-time employees. But anybody that works under 40 hours is going to be out.
Yeah, but I mean, that whole model is, you know, anybody can work, you know, and at whatever hours they want
I say it's discriminatory against women of childbearing years if they want to work part time. You are specifically discriminating against that group.
Well, the other thing that they want to do is they want to create. They're talking about this in California and even federally. That, you know, we have something called the franchise model in the United States, which is like, let's say you were going to run a Burger King or, you know, it's a way for people to start businesses. You buy a franchise, an Arby's or, some kind of store that's a chain. They want to basically say like that franchise model, that business, you can sue the home company if something, you know, if you slip and fall or something like that. Well, let's destroy this franchise model. One of the reasons we have so many small businesses in this country is because we reward small business. We have, you know, there are millions of franchise owners in the country. And so I do worry about these. They're all well-intended, but they have adverse consequences. And that's another example.
What were Adam and I talking about, Gary?
Unintended consequences is the title of your most recent episode.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly in California because, I mean, you can probably point to every law that's passed and say this had a good intention mostly. You know, it had a good intention, but good intentions aren't well enough. We live in a real world where people respond to incentives, and that's what economics is about. People respond to incentives. If you tax something, ladies and gentlemen, you get less of it. If you tax something less, you get more of it. So we could be putting more taxes at work and investment and entrepreneurship and, you know, human effort, and therefore, you know, people give less of it. And why do we do that? Why do we tax goods rather than bads? We should tax things like smoking, those kinds of things, and not things.
We do. We tax those. We tax
I know,
prices.
But I'm just saying, you know, we should tax people on what they take out of the economy, in my opinion, not what they put into it.
What about the income disparity that is of great concern right now?
Well, as I said, the average family income is up $5,000 in the last 3 years. So, I think there's way too much emphasis on how well the rich are doing. I mean, look, yes, we have Warren Buffett. We have, you know, Zuckerberg. We have who runs Amazon? Davos.
Bezos.
Yeah. I mean, these people are super rich, but my God, nobody ever put a gun to your head and said you have to go to Amazon or you have to use Google or if you use Facebook. I don't use Facebook. You know, I don't like their politics, but I mean, I have the right to do so. I mean, but think about how many, you know, Bill Gates has made hundreds of thousands of millionaires with his company. We all buy his products. So I don't like the idea of tearing down people who are successful. I really don't. I think, you know, the idea should be to make poor people rich, not to make rich people poor. And I think sometimes the income redistributionists have that mixed up. We are blessed by the fact that we have some of the great companies. I mean, I'm proud of the fact the five greatest companies in the world today, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Netflix, or at least five of the greatest, are all American companies. I don't want them to be German companies. I don't want them to be Chinese companies. So I don't think we should tear down successful companies. And, you know, my old boss used to say, you know, and this, there's a lot of wisdom to this, that liberals love jobs, but they hate employers. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't have jobs without employers. You're an employer, right? Yeah. You employ people. Yeah. You know, why do we try to denigrate people for being successful? And this idea that people get rich are villains, I think is really misguided.
It's been around before, and we've gone through periods like this.
We have.
How do you see us? I mean, you're optimistic. Leave us with thoughts on how we get out of the situation we're in, so people are less divisive.
What do you mean by that?
Less divisiveness, more happiness with the reality of what's going on economically. I mean, it feels like we're in sort of a.
I think, you know, look, I'm a big fan of Donald Trump's. I know him personally. I like him. I always say, you know, that Donald Trump can be a jerk in public. Oftentimes he is, but he's actually in private. He's a very. I like him a lot personally. He's been very good to me. He's a charming person. I think Trump would be so. If I could give him one piece of advice, it's like he has to understand he's the president of everyone, mm-hmm. right? He's not running – anyway. It's one thing when you're running for president and you're right. appealing to your base. But I don't think he's done a good enough job. And I think he's done a good job as president. But he has to reach out to everyone, and I don't think he's done that. It's too much us versus them. Mm-hmm. And this polarization – and by the way, Trump is a symptom of the polarization. He's not the cause of it, although I think may have made it worse. I mean, I think Obama made it worse. I don't think Obama really – unified the country as they should. I do think this is the thing that troubles me the most, is the polarization in the country. You know, you go in the cities and it's 80%, you know, Hillary Clinton, Obama, The further – I noticed this on the campaign. The further you got out of the cities, the higher the Trump vote was. It was almost a linear relationship. That's not a healthy thing. It's not. And you know what I've noticed? People hang out with the people who believe the things that they do.
Sure.
It used to not be like that. So I'd go into the newsroom. I worked for the Wall Street Journal, and I used to go in the newsroom. And they were nice people, and they're incredibly great reporters. But they were pretty liberal-oriented. And if I had gone up to them and said, you're a bunch of liberals, they would have been insulted by that. They don't think they're liberal because everybody that they hang out with is liberal, things right. like they do. Right. And so, I'd ask people, listen to the show, hey, if you're a liberal, go out, go and talk to conservatives. Listen to them. Don't denigrate them. Don't think that they're the scum of the earth, that they're deplorables. Listen to what they have to say. Same thing for conservatives. I try to, talk to my liberal friends. And, there's actually more common ground than you would think.
That's kind of what I think.
When you sit down with people.
Yeah,
and just,
I really believe that. And that's what's sort of disturbing to me, that we can't sort of
– Can't we all get along?
Yeah,
build I think that, there was a famous Los Angeles
there
person.
There was. He was a very close friend of mine and a patient at one point. And he was a dear man and
– So as a doctor, how do you explain this? How do you explain that we become so polarized as a nation?
What I have said is that trying to understand things, it's hard enough for me to understand one person. To understand the sweep of history is impossible.
Yeah.
So I'm not in a position to make a comment except to observe previous historical sort of sweeps. And I started looking at some of the presidents that I admire. Mm-hmm. And I admired Teddy Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And I know his history pretty well. Mm-hmm. Then I started looking at him through the prism of, say, somebody in 1904. He was a maniac. He was a maniac. And I think I would have disliked him as a president had I been around that time. He was bipolar. He was a malignant narcissist. He was abusive. He was all the things that, wow, surprising I'm hearing about the current president. So I don't know what to make of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if those features are something that certain periods of history need or if – I don't know what to make of it. I think I would have been unhappy with Teddy Roosevelt if I were alive during the time. Very unhappy. And yet he's one of my very favorite presidents in the retrospective scope of history. So history to me is something that you can only understand retrospectively. And living in it, I don't think I can make sense of it. I do know that we've had a massive narcissistic turn in the general character structure of our country.
One thing that bothers me is that poll that came out, very extensive, of young people. They are less religious. They are less patriotic. And they don't want to have kids to the extent that the previous generation. And I think those are all three problematic.
And the less patriotic, they have no exposure to the basic principles of what we're all signing up for here. They have not even exposed to it. Mm-hmm. The no kids, I mean, they've been fed a steady diet of the world's coming to an end.
Yes, that's true.
Which I was a believer in that in 1977.
Yep.
I was predicting a new ice age and the end of the world through acid rain and choking the rivers off with algae blooms. And guess what? We got through that.
This is a really crucial point because I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
This is – for young people listening to the show, this is the single best time ever to be alive in the history of the planet.
Right.
Stop with the cataclysmic, the world is coming to an end and so on. Think of the things that you have access to, the opportunities that exist today, whether you're black, whether you're a woman, whether you're gay. I mean, the rights of people today are so much different than they were 50 years ago. This is the single best time to be alive, and this is the single best place on earth to be alive. So you have won the lottery of life. So stop feeling sorry for yourself. You have so many opportunities to be what you want to be. That's what makes this country great. So the negativity is what drives me crazy.
Right. And the feeling that, again, because our families have not been healthy for a long time, what happens when the dads are not around is that you start looking,
that's a big problem.
Well, the society becomes representative of dad, and all the people I treat that didn't have a dad are very angry with society and the man, which is really dad. And so it's easy to blame the world for whatever's happening to you when if you could – take control over what you do have control
over.
When
I said things are getting better, the one thing that has gotten worse and the trend that worries me the most is the increase in single parent households. You have a strike against you. That's not to say you can't succeed if you don't have a father in the home.
Of course.
But the idea that the government can take the role of a father is a failed experiment.
Yeah, and has been failed repeatedly. So we've got a lot to deal with. But I'm an optimist too. I do believe we'll get out of it. I'm just fearful of
think about, you know, just the technologies. I mean, how things – we started this conversation about talking about fracs. I mean, think about what's going to happen with automation, with robotics, with the coming curing of – you know, in our lifetime – you know, maybe not our life, probably our lifetime, we're going to see cures for cancer, heart disease, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's. We have this all in our grasp, and it's so exciting. I mean, you know, in just the last 100 years, we've expanded life in the terms of life by 30 years. We could potentially do that, you know, another 30 years for people who are born today. That's pretty incredible when you think about it.
One of my favorite TV shows was a show called The Nick about a hospital at the turn of the century, the 20th century. And
Wait, what's this called?
The Nick. The Nick. It's still available on Hulu and Netflix and stuff, but it's really good, and or maybe Amazon. And in it, this surgeon guy gets up in the first episode and he goes, "A man today can expect to live to 40 years of age in the United States." And it was like, "Wow, that's incredible." But yeah, so again, I'm interested in solving problems and helping people, and there's a lot of people still suffering, and we got to kind of get that together. And it would not be that hard. It would not be that hard. A lot of states are doing it. A lot of states have a very high quality of life.
It's you know, I saw some of the statistics on suicide rates for young people, which is, you know, it's a problem. I wonder to what extent we've, you know, I rag against the millennials, and I have three kids that are millennials.
Me too, yeah.
And one of the times, about a few months ago, my son was finally just so fed up with me ragging up, and he turned to me and he said, "Dad, who do you think made us this way?"
Right.
And I said, touche.
Yeah,
you know? We're the ones who gave them the trophies for just showing up. And
I was reminded watching Mindhunter, our parents were fed a steady diet of, there's a serial killer, they're collecting kids, there's a guy with a van, he's giving your kids – I mean, it was constant in the 60s and 70s.
Living in fear.
And so we then, when we became parents, like, well, I'm not letting my kids out of my sight. They had me run – you know, it was a lot of overcompensation.
Well, this is why I think that the climate change obsession with kids from the time they're in kindergarten are like, the world is coming down. Look, I'm not diminishing – climate change.
Yeah.
But we're going to solve this problem.
We have to handle
it. We will solve this problem. Mankind always solves problems. You mentioned – remember when the overpopulation, that it was going to be shoulder to shoulder in America?
Famine.
We're going to run out of energy, famine. And the great thing about mankind is human ingenuity solves these problems. And we will solve that problem, ladies and gentlemen. The Earth is not going to blow up in a fireball in 50 years.
Neil deGrasse Tyson told me that he felt we would be able to actually dial in the temperature we want. The hard part is going to be figure out what the temperature should be. Not getting it down. So, listen, Stephen, I really appreciate
it's been
you
fun
being
to be
here.
Talking to you. Thank
Stephen
you so much.
Stephen is the co-founder of Frax. Check it. Just look it up online, Frax, or go to frax.finance.
Frax.finance.
Frax.finance. Also, get the book, Trumponomics, Inside the American First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Is there going to be a follow-on to that to sort of
If there's a second term.
All right.
We shall see.
Would there be a new plan on the second term or just more of the same?
Well, you know, stay tuned, my friend.
Oh, really?
So, I would tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
And so what? This is interesting. So when the campaign gets going, we're going to hear some new economic ideas?
I think, you know, you're going to see some new ideas in the campaign because you never want to just rest on your laurels. You always want to be moving forward. So. I like the idea of, like, for just one example. I mean, let's give every school kid, you know, a voucher. They can go to any school they want to. Give them $15,000, and if no kid has to go to a failing school.
Interesting. And I when I met with the domestic policy people, there was a.
You mean at the White House?
Yeah.
Who'd you meet with?
Brooke and.
Oh, Brooke's a good friend of mine from Texas. And did you meet with Jared?
Is he a tall guy?
Jared is right. You know, Jared.
Jared Kushner. It was. Oh shoot!
I know that, but Brooke is great.
There was somebody. He's a. I can't remember his last name now. I'm driving me crazy. Anyway, but in there, what I wanted to tell you was there was a group of people.
Did you meet over at the White House? That's fine. Yeah,
There was somebody from the economic advisors, and I'm wondering if you know this guy, big tall guy.
Was this recent or
A couple weeks ago?
Oh yeah, the new chairman of the Council of the Economic Advisors.
Okay, and he tangled with me. He was a very, very smart guy. And he was like, what policies do I have access to change this thing?
Yeah.
And we started talking about releasing Medicaid funds to take care of custodial care for chronic
I like that idea. I like that
and
idea
I said
a lot.
That would change everything.
Yeah, because then you don't have to institutionalize people.
But you'll have the resources to do a lot of things. And that's been a point of contention for 50 years.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, so it's again, they're thinking about doing stuff. So, listen, sir, thank you to have you at Stephen Moore, at PHEN, and website frax.finance, Trumponomics, Frax. We got everything.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank
See you next time. Bye.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.